Hello, Dan Preston here, and welcome to the fourth episode of A Marvellous Lunch Break. Today we'll be putting the hammer down on the Avengers Asgardian Adventurer, and after two forays with the Tin Man and a big green blunderfest, we'll be asking if Thor's thunderous first entry goes any way to lightening the mood.
Dan,
where did this come from?
I went to podcast school. Joining me today is Miss Marvel herself, Anna Harrison.
Hello.
Anna, how are you doing?
Great. Super excited to talk about Thor.
And hopefully not Jane fostering any bad feelings about this movie, Agent Martin Carter.
Hello.
Martin, tell me, did you have a good Odin sleep?
Oh my god.
Or should I say Martin sleep?
I can't even respond to the level of puns you've brought to me. I thought I was the comedy value.
Oh.
I'm just trying to frame everything better to let your personality shine.
I appreciate that.
I do appreciate it. But the rest of the podcast will just be me and Anna just laughing at your puns.
Oh, well, there's no more puns after this.
Oh, okay.
It's downhill from here.
Yeah, it's pretty much, we're over now.
Right.
This is all the value in this podcast.
Join us again next week.
All of the preparation I've put in. So, Thor is the fourth movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Came out in 2011. And the tagline for this movie was Two Worlds, One Hero. What do you think about that?
Well, the Earth's already got Iron Man and the Hulk.
Ah, but Iron Man isn't in Asgard, is he?
Yeah, so he's got the both world element.
Oh, yeah.
The bridge, the rainbow bridge, as you were, between the...
Yeah.
The Bifrost.
The rainbow road. Mm. So, just before we get into some chat about the actual storyline, what do you think of the cast of this movie? Mm. We had Chris Hemsworth, Natalie Portman, Anthony Hopkins, Kat Dennings, Idris Elba, and Tom Hiddleston. So what do you think? Good bunch of peeps?
I loved this cast. It was Tom Hiddleston in particular, from the off, just nailed Loki, didn't he? Just it was so fun to watch him. What I would say, I think that those particular actors are fantastic, but what I would say about this film is that there's so many people in it.
So many.
There's so much cast. There's all that lot, and then there's the Warriors 3 and Lady Sif, and then there's all the ones on Earth as well. There was just a lot of people to keep up with.
Lots, yeah. But I agree, the cast is awesome. Like, there's, and I think, again, it's one of those weird things, sort of looking back in hindsight, especially coming from like an American perspective. I didn't really know Idris Elba too well. I didn't know Tom Hiddleston. Like, those were sort of new faces. I'm kind of new of them, but had never really encountered them as sort of big cinematic presences yet. And so that was sort of, you know, to then be more into like UK culture and then realize Idris Elba, what a boon that was to have him as this character. And Tom Hiddleston, yeah, just smashing it. Like, I'm sure we're going to talk loads about Loki's character amazing. And I mean, it's interesting because sort of as the Marvel movies continue, you have kind of these things of like bigger and bigger casts of characters having to balance everyone's story, everyone's interaction. But I think this was the first time where they really did kind of chuck a lot of people in there that they wanted to give, if not completely equal weight, but a lot of sort of good attention to. And I think for the most part, they did that really well, considering it was, you know, not that many movies in where there was suddenly this big ensemble cast where they were, you know, lots of interactions happening.
So, I mean, judging by the emerald green that you've worn today, are we to take away from this that Loki is one of your highlights of the movie?
Oh, man. I mean, everything about that character. It's funny because, like, watching it again, I don't love him as much as I then love him in Avengers. Like, Avengers is just even another level. But I think it was a great introduction to that character. I have actually always been quite a big fan of Norse mythology. Like, I know sort of a lot of the stories, and I really like the kind of little winks they did to a lot of really classical, like, Norse staples in that mythology. But I thought, like, he just played it. It's such great equal measure of, like, right from the off, you can be sort of, this is someone we're going to have to keep an eye on, but still maintaining that kind of sympathetic quality. He's so engaging, and just like his body language, loved it. Absolutely love it.
I think for me, the thing that I really noticed in this is there was a lot of moments where something would happen. So Loki would have tricked Thor into doing something, and it would the camera would stay on Loki, and you wouldn't get that kind of wry smile or a wink to camera. He still played it really, really straight, and I thought that was a really nice, sensible move that he did to keep us guessing. And I think throughout all of the MCU, Loki and Thor have always kept us guessing about what they're going to do and how they're going to react with each other.
Master of deception, you might say. Or a god of such things. So, out of these set of actors, do you think they've all stood the test of time in the Marvel Cinematic Universe? Is there anyone who's fallen by the wayside?
I have a problem with Natalie Portman.
Oh, yeah? Really?
Yeah. I think this film is her best.
Yes.
I think towards the end, and we'll get to them in about 4 months' time, but she just checks out later on in the series, I think. She doesn't seem like she massively knows what she's doing, or where she is, or what's going on.
Well, I was trying to think about Natalie Portman's kind of career up to this point. I mean, I remember almost nothing about The Dark World. Like, I really realized that when I was watching Thor. I was like, I actually don't remember anything about that movie. So it's like, I can't really think about where it goes to, because I genuinely just don't remember. But I do kind of think there was, I kind of agree, this feeling of Natalie occasionally, she was in this movie, and there did seem to be a sort of like, what am I doing here? thing that came up occasionally. But I love her. I find her so endearing. I've always been such a big Natalie Portman fan. I mean, even down to sort of like the Star Wars movies, I just love her. I could watch her in anything. I could watch her just sitting there.
I think when you look back at that sort of thing, like her being in Star Wars, was she in V for Vendetta as well?
Yes, yeah. Amazing.
So like,
movie.
I remember those ones more than I remember her here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She doesn't seem to be like, she never seems to max out on any of the spectrum she's put on. So she doesn't max out on being a like amazing geeky academic. Mm. She doesn't max out on being the romantic love interest in that storyline. It's all just middle ground for her.
Final note before we dive into it. So the director of this movie is Kenneth Branagh, who, amongst other things, Gilderoy Lockhart from the Harry Potter series.
Oh, yeah.
Is that why that fencing guy is such a parody? we need to have a word about the fencing
guy. We're going to have to talk about the Warriors 3.
Not just that, but I think there's some bits in this movie where Thor is actually kind of doing a Gilderoy Lockhart thing, especially when, as soon as he's depowered and he's getting jabbed in the hospital, or he's getting hit by the car, he's very like, he's full of hubris and he's like, I'm amazing, I'm great, and then immediately gets put down.
You do a really good Thor voice.
Really?
Yeah. Can you do every bit of Thor now in that voice?
Let's see, what lines of Thor have we got? One of my favourite is later on in the movie where he strides through the Bifrost and he says, get into the healing room. It's just so passive off. He just points and he keeps on walking. It's like, that's when we see Thor on a mission. I'm really a big, big fan of Thor and the way he speaks. It's very, he's in charge of every room.
It's a really affected kind of voice. I mean, I love it, but I do remember being a little bit jarred by it when I first heard it and saw it in cinemas. But it's amazing, again, how quickly it just becomes like, it's just the way he talks, like it works.
There is a bit of flip-flopping with the accent, I think, at the start of the film that caught me out, but I think he does perfect that as the movie goes on and as obviously the series go on. There is a thing that struck me in this one though about Thor being this kind of I know everything's going my way, but when he's on Earth there's some stuff that he knows instantly and there's some stuff that he like has no idea about. So he doesn't know that you don't smash your coffee cup after you've had a coffee. He doesn't know that you can't buy a horse from a pet shop that sells parrots and puppies. But yet he does know about the World Tree, and he can draw the World Tree in Jane's journal and explain, like, you know, how all this mysticism and how the universe works. He's got such advanced knowledge of some things, yet such little knowledge about how to exist in regular life.
Well, he's an alien. We can't forget that.
Yeah.
He's a big, blonde, dumb, but
beautiful,
also very clever alien.
Yeah. But just what we're worried about Brenna being the director for this, I remember when that was announced, and just thinking, like, what? Like, what? Oh, my God. I mean, I'm such a Brenna fan. When I was, like, quite a young girl, one of my favorite movies was actually Much Ado About Nothing. big Shakespearean fan my whole life as well. My dad's actually a Shakespearean scholar, so I was sort of raised on that type of language, that style. And sort of as soon as the movie got going, I remember thinking, oh, thank God Kenneth Branagh's the one in charge of this. Because otherwise, like, I can't even really begin to think what kind of introduction to that world would have been like if it wasn't Kenneth Branagh having, like, a good handle on that type of language, that type of kind of grand storytelling ability. Yeah.
Anthony Hopkins' opening overdub about the history of Asgard.
Oh, beautiful.
Frost giants look amazing.
Mm-hmm. Frost giants are scary,
And I think this is the first point where we kind of see some sort of view of the cosmic cube, or at least a big square blue shiny thing.
Is that the Tesseract?
No, it's something else. Okay. It's a casket of something. I can't remember.
It was
the
exact casket of never-ending winters or something. Yeah. Casket of ancient winters.
It is sort of like a particular frost giant weapon. I think it's different from the Tesseract, is my understanding.
But I mean, at this point, still, you know, we're four movies in now, and there's a lot of blue glowy things, right? But, you know, I'd never really noticed that before at the start, that they were holding it and that's what they were using. Mm. And when I saw that and it kind of clicked, I thought it was really cool. And Asgard, its absolute shiniest.
Yeah, beautiful.
It's great to see Odin as, like, a king in his prime. Mm-hmm. I probably did appreciate it, but now we've seen Odin in a couple of movies. We've seen him get older, have a little Odin sleep or two. It's great to see Odin, the king in his prime. What do you think?
Yeah, I really liked it. And in Norse mythology, they do use nouns to in everything, don't they? Mm-hmm. They over noun.
Yeah.
Odin sleep is not in Norse mythology, as far as I can remember. So why the hell it is in this film is beyond me.
You need to eat your Odin breakfast.
Stop being so Odin grumpy.
But I think Anthony is. He's so great in that role. I love the bit when he's like dragged him back from Jotunheim and he's like having that fight with, I love that fight with Thor, and he does this really biting like, but you're not king yet. And I was like, oh, Anthony, you're so good.
But we get a really quick introduction to a lot of the cast of this movie. I know we've talked more specifically about some of the big hitters already, but instantly we're introduced to the Warriors Three, we're introduced to Sif.
That was a joke for all the people over 25.
Or anyone not in Europe?
Or not in Europe. Yeah. I'm very sorry.
So, Loki as well, looking less terrible than we see him in later movies. He's very clean. He looks like he's had a wash.
His hair is terrible in this film.
His hair's terrible.
The hair across the board, like, Thor is in a bad piece a couple times. So, they haven't quite got their hair game on point just yet.
But you can tell straight away Loki is a villain. There's something going on in his eyes. Something about the way he's looking at people. Mm. The very gentle nudges, the very gentle touches on people. He's got that aura of a bad guy from the start.
Can I say that one thing I do wish that sort of first, that jaunt they do to Jotunheim under Thor's ill-advised plan, which, as we know, Loki sort of goads him into. I do wish that piece had maybe done a little bit more to kind of also show the other side of how good this group of friends work together, because you've got to assume they've been on lots of, like, scraps and adventures together, and they obviously trust Loki to a certain... I mean, he is the god of mischief and lies, and they kind of know this. Like, there's a conversation later about, like, oh, he's kind of a baddie, but, you know, he wouldn't do something like this. So I do wish... I think that was maybe missing a little bit of that camaraderie of, well, they are really good friends, but it's just reached the point for Loki where he's like, I've had enough of this. And I would have liked to have seen a bit more banter, maybe during the fight scenes, because they all had kind of their own fighting style, and it would have been sort of nice to see how they kind of fought together. Maybe they sort of, you know, the way the Avengers do later, they have a great way of fighting together and using each other's strength to enhance their own strength, and I would have loved to have seen that, because then it would have made Loki's betrayal more impactful. So I do wish we could have seen more of the Brotherhood earlier on in the movie before we come to know Loki solely as a villain.
Yeah, I like the Warriors Three as a concept.
Yeah.
Like on paper, it's like, oh, that's quite cool. They've all got their own individual thing. They're all kind of. It reminded me of Maid Marian and Merry Men. Do you remember that TV show from childhood? Oh,
nope.
I thought you were just like complete. I was like, you know, it's Robin Hood, right? It's very confused now. I've never seen that. Sorry.
Right. I just, apart from the guy with the fencing thing, that I don't understand him.
One of the Warriors Three has already been a Marvel character in Punisher Warzone. So he was Frank Castle.
Was he?
Yeah, the big ginger dude with the big beard is Frank Castle.
Oh my god, I did not know that.
So, different Marvel universe.
Yeah.
Another pocket Punisher Warzone universe unto itself. But still, I thought, I don't know whether it was a nod or whether it was just casting being similar, because Punisher Warzone wasn't necessarily the apex of Marvel's output.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I've never heard of this.
Angry, kills people.
I know who The Punisher is. Isn't that a film in the 80s?
Which one?
The Punisher.
Wasn't he?
He wore a very tight t-shirt.
Yeah.
I wasn't around in the 80s, unfortunately. But I think one of the really, really great bits of this movie happens when Loki is trying to deceive Thor into going to Jotunheim. Mm. Is when he succeeds at doing it, and Thor's like, "We're gonna go," and it's so easy. You just see Loki kind of put his head in his hands, and he's like, "Brother, you're so stupid." You know, I mean, you can almost see him thinking that he, as if his deception was that easy. You just need to be like, "Come on, Thor, have a pop at him."
Yeah.
And he's like, "Yeah, we'll go. Come on, lads, we're off." And Lady Sif, obviously. And they just all head off thoughtlessly and kick off this insane fight. I mean, it's a really great fight sequence.
Great.
Massive frost giant monster thing at the end. Mm. Gets a hole punched in his head.
Thor is a bullet. It was so good. I love that. I love that you sort of... you're absolutely right. Like, it's a great battle to sort of see a bit of, like, Mjolnir's abilities.
Mjolnir's.
And yeah, how Thor can use it in, like, sort of various different scenarios. That was really cool. The CGI gets a little bit dodged when the frost giants are in a proper melee. I felt that towards the end as well. But all in all, awesome fight.
And there's that great line in it where Loki manages to calm down Thor in their argument with the Frost Giants, and then at the end the Frost Giant goes, "Run home, little princess," and then Loki's like, oh no, you've messed this up, and then it all just kicks off.
Yeah, there's so much superiority coming from Loki in the way he talks, and he's not necessarily massive and muscled and ready to fight like Thor is, but you can tell he's got a load of brains. And I think there's some great scenes here as well with Rainbow Road. And, you know, we get the first introduction to Heimdall. And Idris Elba is incredible.
So great.
A lot of people say he's kind of wasted in the Marvel Universe with being such a bit part character. But I think Heimdall is amazing.
Mm. Yeah.
And he's watching over everything in the whole movie.
Yeah,
and I think the bit, massively jumping ahead, but the bit where he gets turned into ice, he could have very easily died at that moment. Mm. You know, if he was such a minor character, they might have just killed him off.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, the fact that he, through, you know, glaring very intensely and through the might of his will, he manages to break free from it. I thought that's a really nice moment that they actually, we haven't paid for Idris Elba, but we might as well use him a bit more.
Yeah.
They didn't just kind of push him off the end of the Bifrost into the water.
But you're right, yeah, that frozen ice moment, like, I think it, even though you're right, he is in it so infrequently, I totally believe that intensity, like, that he can intense his way out of a block of ice, makes total sense, even though we've only seen him really briefly. Totally buy it.
Yeah.
Totally buy it.
And also in that frost giant scene, Odin coming down at the end on his horse in the rainbow light. It was such like like, you know, that gravitas of Odin was just like, whoa, this is, you wouldn't mess with that, would you?
Yeah.
But I love that he protects his son's stupid actions in public. He's like, "My son is right, and we're gonna go home now. Don't you dare follow us." And then they get home and he's like, clip round straight. It was very real, was that, even though we're in this alien planet, alien world, Asgard, it's still very parent and child interaction. You messed up, son. But I'm going to save your face in public on my big horse. Yeah. And we're going to, Bifrost away. It's amazing.
Yeah, just so, and I think, it is in a lot of a very human argument as well that he then has with Thor. I mean, yes, I think Odin maybe overreacts a little bit by banishing him completely, but that sort of father-son dynamic of the young buck who wants to, prove himself, to him, war is glorious, and it's exciting, and he could, be even more of, a big guy than he is now, whereas then you have the father who's gone through the horrors of war, he's older, he just wants peace, he wants a calm rule, and, when Thor calls him, a foolish old man, and I really liked, I watched that scene again, and I was like, yeah, this argument makes perfect sense. This is definitely something a warrior father, warrior son would argue about.
And at this point, Thor's accepted that he's accepted within himself that he's king.
Yeah.
He was so close to becoming king. And at this point, you can still see his frustration that he's not king.
Mm.
Because he clearly feels like he's in charge now.
Yeah.
And Odin's messing with him. And I think that you're an old man and a fool moment is the last time in the Marvel Universe where we see him be a kid, really. Mm. I think it's a really powerful moment. Obviously, it kicks off the whole reason why Thor's sent to Earth is that's Odin's tipping point. He's been disrespected. But it's probably the last. There's a lot of immature moments of Thor, but a lot of them after this point are due to naivety.
Mm.
As we mentioned about the world.
Mm.
That's where we see him being naive in his own world, and I think that's kind of the last time we see it. After that, he's a lot cleverer, especially in later movies and in Thor Ragnarok. When he's on Asgard, he knows exactly what's going
on.
Yeah,
he knows where the healing room is.
Yeah, he does.
He knows.
Someone will
he
take.
Knows when he knows what exists.
Yeah, knows that someone will take someone there for him. Yeah, but then we're in the beige world, and I miss Asgard so much. But it's, don't get me wrong, there are some amazing comedic beats, the bit with the orderlies, those poor orderlies in the hospital.
He gets tasered as well.
The taser, oh my god, that's so funny. I love the tasering bit. Getting hit by the car again, as soon as he walks out of the hospital. And let's also not forget, on Earth is the first time you get to see him unclothed.
That was a highlight of the
film. And it was unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable.
And there is that moment in every single film with Thor, and isn't there?
Yeah.
Which makes the MCU worth every penny.
I mean, I can't even begin to imagine how you maintain a body like that. But they're also jumping ahead a bit, but when he goes to try to get the hammer back, when he tries to pull that sucker out of the ground, it has to be the biggest his arms have ever been. It's mind-blowing.
But it's such a comic book moment.
Oh, yeah.
That bit also really reminded me of in the Captain America film where he's pulling the helicopter back.
Yes.
And it's just, Under Armour skin tight top plus bicep. I was just
there's some good arm.
I know we've complained a lot about the
female objectification.
So I feel like this is our redemption moment.
The Marvel,
I'm enjoying that very much.
The Marvel Universe knows how, I've got to give it to them, they do know how to shoot a man's upper torso. They know what they're doing.
I mean, I think
it's my favourite line in the whole podcast.
To not get into how over-sexualised Thor and some of the male characters in the Marvel Universe, I think, are. That being said, if you've got an upper body like Chris Hemsworth, I don't think there is a bad angle.
It's a very good point as well. A very good point. Yeah. And actually, interestingly, if you kind of compare who the kind of the camera gaze is very much on Thor, Natalie Portman is very buttoned up for it. I mean, she looks great, but I can distinctly remember there's a scene where she's running slow motion, and I genuinely thought they got that girl is strapped in there, she is wearing a high neck shirt, the point of this running is the emotional running to this person and not let's see how many parts of a woman's body we can make wiggle, and everything is very the sort of general focus is look how amazing this male god is, and not let's give him a buxom lady to match type thing, which I really like.
And we were in New Mexico, right? Mm. This is where it is. I thought New Mexico was a hot place because they wear a lot of coats and scarves.
I'm not sure what time of year it is there. New Mexico can, like, if, especially if you're out in the desert, certain times of day, you've got, it's a bit of a gambling thing, because at late at night, you've got, it gets really cold when the sun goes down. It can get crazy cold.
So you probably shouldn't sleep under the stars.
You really shouldn't. It's exposure is a
in
big
a
problem.
In a t-shirt with a blanket.
Yeah. And, but then, if you're a proper sort of, like, scientist going out there, you stay pretty covered up. I don't know about multiple layers, but the sun is brutal. So, yeah, I don't know what time of year they're playing with there.
Not,
but
not
it's,
for a duffel coat.
It's not for a duffel coat.
There are some heavily jacketed people in the background.
Yeah.
Especially SHIELD agents.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Oh, the SHIELD agents, yeah. I forgot again how, like, Coulson's a big part in this.
In the whole MCU. Yeah. I'd forgotten how much he was there.
There's a reason he got his own TV show.
Yeah.
And I think SHIELD coming into this movie is something that we'll focus on in a couple of minutes, but as soon as I started to touch on Natalie Portman,
yeah.
Is Natalie Portman the leading lady in this film, or is it Lady Sif?
I would say it's Natalie. I really like Sif's character. I think she has some good lines in there. I like her dynamic with Thor. But, I mean, I really like Natalie Portman. I really like their kind of easy chemistry she has. I sort of believe that they're, like, attracted to each other, but I also believe that she has, like, a good head on her shoulders. I really like the kind of gentle strength she brings to the movie quite a bit. Sif is, like, the warrior. She's also very in control, but in control in, like, a different kind of way. I mean, Natalie might be having her, you know, her research taken away from her by SHIELD, and she feels, like, very, like, oh, God, what's going on a lot of the time. But I think that she's someone who isn't as, like, rattled as she might appear a lot of the time, and I really like that.
Martin, how about you?
I think I've made my feelings about Natalie Portman in this film very clear. But I think, you know, if you look in the comic books, doesn't Jane Foster become Thor
yes.
at some point? I couldn't imagine that with this version of Jane Foster. I couldn't imagine Natalie Portman wielding Mjolnir. I could imagine Lady Sif having a go, but she just gets cut out halfway through the MCU. She has to go into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the TV yeah. show. It's not good enough.
Which is a shame.
It is a shame. I think she's really good.
Mm.
And of all the people to cut out, she would not be my first choice
no,
out of
that
subset of people.
Yeah, that's a real shame. Yeah, I agree with that.
At this point, there's a few really good scenes. There's the scene with the pickups in the desert,
mm-hmm.
where people are trying to react to a strange phenomenon.
That's a fun scene.
I think it's a classic Marvel scene
yeah.
as well. I always think fondly about it, and that totally happened.
Mm.
If a hammer just appeared in the desert, that everyone thinks is a satellite, despite it clearly being a hammer. If you'd never seen a Thor movie before, or never read a Thor comic book before, you would still go into the desert and go, oh, it's Thor's hammer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I enjoyed how entrepreneurial that guy was who brought his barbecue.
Yeah.
It was just like, right, there's going to be a group of people here in the desert. They're going to spend the day. They're going to need some food. I'm going to make some money out of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, you know, what that's kind of my perception of America. And I don't know whether that's the reality. It might be equivalent to them saying, here's Britain, and everyone sat around eating strawberries and scones.
Yeah.
And
drinking tea.
I mean, I do like tea. But I think it really plays to me, because that's one of my perceptions of southern states in America, is barbecues, desert, pickup trucks, and just
totally
let's get together and sort of have a good time over a dumb activity.
Oh yeah, I've been to that party many times in America.
What,
many
to get Thor's hammer out of
it? No, I never had a Thor's hammer thing, but you know, pulling tree trunks or like the tree roots out of the ground, a tractor pull, that kind of stuff. I've been many, might have been in Virginia, but I'm telling you, many wow. a high school evening was spent doing similar activities. And then you also have, I think, the kind of American icon thing of, then the government comes and shuts down everyone's fun. They come and take over the hammer, and SHIELD is there to overlook things. And I can't believe we haven't brought this up yet. Martin?
I've been biding my time until before we even get to the incredible cameo of Hawkeye. Yeah. Just that scene of him invading the S.H.I.E.L.D. Kind of set up, you know, him running through those white corridors, kicking people out, smashing people up. Like, he doesn't use his hammer. He hasn't got his hammer. It's all his brute strength. Mm. He's had everything taken away from him. He hasn't got his shoulder pads. He hasn't got his sparkly cuffs. But yet he still beats down, you know, 20 of the most highly trained agents that you can get, which I enjoyed. I didn't massively enjoy his like, scream when he couldn't pick up his hammer. That felt a bit weird to me. But just Hawkeye's, like, introduction to the MCU here is, like, you can't really see his face until he's up in the crane thing. You know, you see him grab the bow and arrow from the... From the wall of guns.
So funny. He briefly picks up a gun and then it's like, nope, bow and arrow.
Yeah. So it's just when Coulson's like, and he'd eyes up high with a gun, and you just see guns and you're like, oh man, who's this? And then it's like, camera move, bow.
Oh yeah.
You're marking out at this point.
Yeah.
Something, and in retrospect as well, knowing that this is the first introduction of Hawkeye, who has a bit part in two Avengers movies and is somewhat present in this.
Oh, Martin's face.
It's still a massive moment of excitement to see him pick up that bow and know that we're getting a new character.
Yeah.
Even if you don't know who Hawkeye
is. And also, it's really like you don't see Hawkeye in full Hawkeye mode. Like, he doesn't fire his arrow.
Mm.
Like, it's kind of like, we're just teasing you with this. Like, you know what's gonna come now. I'm like, yeah, I do. Yeah, it's gonna be good.
But it's the same sort of teasing that we didn't really get, we discussed last time with Iron Man and War Machine.
Mm.
And I think we start to see a lot of teasing in this movie.
Mm.
And save that for another time, sort of.
Yeah, bigger things to come.
Yeah. Right?
Absolutely. We've already discussed the really comic book scene where Thor's trying to get the hammer out of the ground. He's clearly really frustrated and he completely gives up at that point. Mm. And that's kind of the end to the first part of the movie, where we see his hubris, his confidence in himself, and his power is all completely gone. And there's a really good moment just after that where Selvig takes him to a bar. Yeah. And I'd never noticed this before, but I'm a really big Foo Fighters fan. And a song by Foo Fighters is on in the background of the bar, a song called Walk. And the lyrics to that song, as soon as I heard it, it was like they picked that song for a reason. Because the first verse of the song is, "A million miles away, your signal in the distance, to whom it may concern, I think I lost my way. Getting good at starting over, every time that I return, learning to walk again, I believe I've waited long enough, where do I begin?"
Wow.
And those lyrics are front and center in the song, but now I heard it, I was like, that's Thor's story. He's learning to walk again in this movie. And it was just such a great closer to the first part of the movie. What did you think about that?
Would you go out for a drink with Thor?
Totally.
Well, not on my own, I don't think. Not that I have anything to like fear, but he's going to get into a scrap with someone. He's going to break stuff, whether on purpose or accident. I would definitely like to be part of his, like, group, so if we're all going to be rowdy, we're all going to be rowdy together, but I know myself, and I'd be the one going, sorry, it's, you know, I'll move him along, so, yeah.
I think, though, it's kind of Selvig that clearly must have got like that, because he gets lumbered back.
I would be that. If I tried to keep up drinking with Thor, I'd be the one who would need carrying home. I cannot handle my alcohol. Mm.
I've got, after this, written down, Loki dodgy dealing.
He does do some dodgy dealing.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about Loki's plan. Like, or maybe we should wait till the very end when it sort of all comes together, because it's a multifaceted beast.
Does it not all hinge on the unexpected heart attack that his father has, though? Like, I feel like that's the thing that allows the Frost Giants in, but he didn't predict. He was genuinely shocked when his dad fell into the Odin sleep.
But I think that's the thing about Loki, is like, he's got a plan and then something happens and he like adapts and like does something a bit. Because I think initially his only goal was to ruin Thor's big day, his big coronation day. And then like, given the way that went, he's like, ooh, this could be my chance to properly get Thor out of here. Even if he didn't think like total banishment, he's like, dad's going to be pissed if I pull this off. And then, you know, the frost giant, like, oh, maybe I'm a frost giant, confronts Odin. Odin falls, like, Odin's asleep, and he's like, ooh,
now
I can do that. Like, I think that's how his mind
So he's more of an opportunistic than a strategist.
Yeah, I don't think from letting in the frost giants to ruin Thor's coronation, his endgame was all the way King Thor's dead, like, type thing. I think he is very much, like wily, manipulative.
Yeah, but I think we forget as well that there's an aspect to Loki where he doesn't necessarily have an end game. It is all mischief.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's just, how can we mess with everyone in the best way possible? Yeah. And he's almost got a natural desire and ability to just cause mayhem, whatever form that takes. And I don't know whether whether he was trying to push Odin into some sort of health issues, and trying to really bring that out of him. I don't know, I kind of looked back and thought maybe he knew what he was doing, and then he succeeded, fell into the Odin sleep, and then as soon as it happened, he was back to acting and, you know, gods, come quickly. And it's like, my father is dying.
Another aspect of Loki I'd like to talk about is when he turns into Captain Planet. And he's just blue from head to toe.
How do you feel about Blokey?
Blukey.
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 Why? That never happens at any other time. And it was almost like it was almost like when he was fulfilling a lot of his kind of true power. You know, he's more physical than mental powers that he turned blue. And I was like, oh, I'd forgotten that happened. And I was expecting to pick five people from different continents around the world to solve global warming and pollution, but it did not happen.
I kind of think from this movie onwards, and even sort of kind of towards the end of the movie onwards, they kind of don't want us to think too strongly about the fact that Loki is a frost giant and he's not, or part frost. I don't quite understand Loki's origin in this movie. Yeah, he's blue.
He can turn blue.
Yeah, that seems to be the sort of extent of his frost giantness, because he certainly feels no affinity for his people. No. Like, he just, you know, manipulates. Except I think one thing that it's important to kind of hold on to when you kind of think about Loki's motivation while he's doing it, yes, mischief manager type thing, but I like to believe that he does desperately want Thor's love and approval, and, you know, he thinks, well, he is the smart one compared to big dumb Thor. And I think it's a classic kind of sibling thing. I mean, you've got, like, King Lear when Edward, like, kind of tricked his father into banishing his brother. It's a kind of classic thing. Like, no, Daddy, I'm the best. Like, why can't you see it? I'm so much better than he is.
Oh, wow.
That's a great Loki impression.
Yeah, but, like,
that's, we've got them between us. I can do Thor. You can do Loki.
Can I just do a terrible British accent and be that guy who does fencing?
Sure.
Yes.
I'm not
going to
do it.
Okay, right, okay. So the thing that's kind of going on parallel to this is Thor brings Selvig back in a bit of a drunken state. Thor's fine, of course. And he has a lovely little fireside thing with Jane Foster.
Aww.
Now, I think your sound there summed up my feelings about it, but there's one of the craziest lines in the movie, which is just, I feel really poorly written, because Jane Foster's like, oh, I come up here to think and reconcile particle data. Yeah, it's just like two different things. Thinking, hard science. It's almost like, look at how smart I am, etc., etc. And you kind of feel that that Jane Foster is a really smart scientist in this movie. She knows a lot, clearly, but she doesn't seem to be throwing it out there. Especially to Thor, who is like big dumb Thor, if you just said.
Who manages to explain how, like, the world tree works and all the different cosmos. Yeah. You know, the crux of what she's been trying to discover throughout her entire academic career.
Yeah, it's a bit unfortunate.
She just wants to snuggle at this point.
He sketches it out with a biro. He's like, no, science. You said particle data. I'm in here. I'm in the room. And it's, you know, it's quite a sweet moment. And I think there's a running theme throughout this movie of childhood stories, tales and fables. Which really fits with Norse mythology. I think it's really nice.
This movie did have a lot of heavy lifting to do in the introduction of magic. You know, by the time Doctor Strange comes around, we've
oh, he just bulldozes straight yeah, through, like straight. I did with your sentence just now. I'm very sorry.
But no, but it's true, because like by that point they're like we've got it, the fans trust us, they know, like by Doctor Strange, like they, anything we tell them, they're just gonna be like, oh yeah, let's just fold that into our understanding of this universe. And I feel like that scene, I bet they had like, okay, we've got to get some sort of like magic equals science sort of thing in there, where actually now I think they very easily could have just been, look, it's magic. Like, yes, like, you know, particle matter, all that stuff, that exists too. This is something separate. This is just straight up magic. But back then, still so early on in you know, building this world, getting the audience's like understanding and trust, I felt that scene was really shoehorned in, but I bet they felt they had to do it. Like, had to do it.
Yeah, I mean, this is really our first alien encounter in the whole of the Marvel Universe. Thor is an alien. As much as he looks like Chris Hemsworth, he's Thor. And I think it's Tret in a really gentle way up until this scene. So I'm not a massive fan of it. I think, as you said, it's shoehorned in. I think it is a huge plot hole, because how they don't freeze to death when there's kids running around in the middle of the day in barber jackets in the desert. They can't make their mind up whether it's the hot desert where people can rock up and have barbecues or whether it's the middle of winter. But I don't think any of us want that.
No.
Okay. So I feel like the movie kind of paces really quickly from this point.
Yeah.
I thought it was a final act that really didn't have much going on and spread it out over quite a long period of time. We almost immediately start to see the big silver monster after this.
Destroyer.
Which, yeah, we find out is called the Destroyer, which is such a great name.
So good.
And I love the first sighting of it. With the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents in the desert.
Mm.
Coulson's like, oh, it must be Stark again.
Yeah.
It's just, we keep getting these nods to Tony Stark. And how he brushes it off for a second was hilarious. Mm. Martin, what did you think about the big silver non-Stark monster?
I found it really scary. I remember the first time I saw it, I found it scary. I think it's something about the noise that it makes.
The noise.
Is really jarring. It's a really off note that it has. I don't know how they made it, but it was just, that noise was just awful. Oh,
I can remember being in cinema and that, it being so loud. Like, so, so loud. I remember, like, kind of audibly, like, gasping in the cinema when it, like that noise is insane.
And with every other thing like that we've seen in the universe so far, has had a person inside or a person behind the controls. This is just like,
automaton.
go and kill Thor. And you know there's no reasoning, there's no wisecrack that's going to solve it. And I felt scary. I would say that it was conquered fairly quickly.
Yeah.
the whole final section is quite pacey. And also, just before the Destroyer comes to Earth, the Warriors 3 come to Earth with Lady Sif, and I love that moment where they're just knocking on the glass and they're like, hi, we're here, but then have no role in destroying.
Well,
they just don't do anything, they're just useless against the Destroyer.
I think they've kind of got a couple good set like moments. Like, I love the bit where Lady Sif like has stabbed it through and it just rotates his entire body round. Like, that was, I remember seeing that, like, that is cool. Like,
that is one of the creepiest things as well, right?
Yeah, so I do like that, you know, the Warriors 3, like, they're just going for it, they're attacking it, they don't have their Thor with them, they know he's lost his powers, but they're gonna do what they can. I think, again, this is when I would have liked, at the very beginning, to have a better understanding of, like, how they fought together as a group, because then I think the absence of Thor, you could then forgive them being fairly ineffectual because they're so used to fighting as a team or having, I mean, we did see that Thor obviously probably most of the time brings it home in the end, but it would have been nice to have that establishment from the beginning that when they're a unit, they're totally, like, can turn it out, whereas this, they're off balance, the Destroyer is particularly horrific, because I think there's a lot of sort of undercutting of the Warriors 3 that kind of keeps happening, like they are kind of presented as this kind of quirky group. You've got them, they still got their superhero, well, they've got their incredible strength to sort of show how terrifying a thing the Destroyer is. Like, he's not just walking around, you know, blasting out mortals. Like, these guys can't take him down. He has all these, like, cool powers. And even though it's really quick, like, it's really pacey, I kind of appreciated that, because I think if it had been drawn out much longer, I mean, you kind of know where it's going to go. Like, Thor is going to have to sacrifice himself in some way to get his powers back. So I think if that had been drawn out more, it might have been like, come on, like, we know.
So what do you think about the scene where Thor gets his powers back?
I mean, I thought it was pretty great, but I really wanted, like, a Sword in the Stone moment. Like, I thought that's what we were going to get, like, him, you know, drawing the hammer back out. Instead, it, you know, sort of flies over to him, and I guess he grabs it when he's still lying down. Like, he's still, like, on the ground, and his hand just sort of comes up like that, which is a bit weird. But, I mean, yeah, it's as dramatic as it needed to be. Thank God the hammer didn't, like, fly through anyone. Or, like, anything on its, like, way to Thor.
I thought it might have come through the Destroyer.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
That's how the Destroyer died. I just liked it when he got his cape back. I'm a big fan of the cape.
Yeah. And so is Natalie Portman. That's a good look, she says.
But as well, it's really tongue-in-cheek, because she goes, oh, my God. And he's a god. Yeah. Do you not see the humor there? Is that she used a common Midgard phrase to express her disbelief. But he's actually, it's just such a clever and amazing joke. Mm. And I really hope that my sarcasm hasn't devalued it in any way. But what do you feel about Jane Foster in this scene?
Well, I think I said before, like, I appreciated the slow-mo run as, you know, a conveyance of emotion. Oh, she's running to him, and there was no, like, she's strapped in there. She's got the high neck top. Thank God for that. I think they have a connection. She's obviously super into him. I think anyone would be pretty emotional if the guy you were crushing on and turns out to be this cool person has been struck down. Like, she thinks he's about to die. Mm. And, I don't know. Oh, you guys are so hard on Jane Foster. I like her so much.
There's too many coats in that scene for me.
So many coats, yeah.
And I think the other weird bit of dialogue is when Jane Foster's like, it's over, you're safe. Like, she has no idea. You literally have no idea. Maybe the next Destroyer is just around the corner. Maybe there's a whole army of them. But she's like, oh, it's fine, Thor. I'm sure he's comforted by knowing that it's, you know...
She's not on the roof. She's not thinking properly.
Yeah. Not in her thinking space.
This isn't where she reconciles particle data. So Thor gets the Bifrost open. Well, he doesn't. Heimdall smashes out of his ice.
Intenses out of the ice. Love it.
He sheer willpowers himself unfrozen, which is incredible.
Yeah.
And I know we've already talked about it a little bit earlier in the show, but he opens the Bifrost. Thor strides in. Get him to the healing room. But from here...
They go in the same direction. Like, there's only one way to go from the Bifrost, and that's into Asgard. Like, where else are you going to take him? Like, it's like he just marches off. It's like, well, you could just go together.
Yeah.
Like, you could just take
He's got stuff to do.
And he goes to the healer room anyway, because that's where Odin is.
Oh,
he's Odin sleep. You could just say, come with me to the healing room.
Yeah. Or he could just pick him up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's so many things he could have done.
We've seen him carry Selvig.
Yeah, it would have been no problem whatsoever.
It would have been water off of Thor's hammer.
He's got a lot on his mind. The thing about the healing room scene, though, so the Frost Giants have, like, come in to kill Odin. Loki's killed them as, like, I've saved you, father! You know, trick. There's one bit in that scene that really battles me, and I, this is a Marvel thing for me as well. I am so annoyed how quick Frigg or Freya is Odin's wife. Frigg, I think, gets taken out. She pulls the sword, and I was like, yes! Another kind of, like, badass warrior woman. And she gets, like, I think, one quick swing in, and then they just take her out.
Which happens in the Dark World as well, right?
I think so, yeah. Well, she has a little bit more there, because she was trying, I think, to go tricksy rather than warrior-esque. And I think Marvel does this a lot. You've got your one... solid, like, warrior woman. Like, you've got the hero who will, you know, get a good, like, crack in, like, a really good fighter. And there seems to be no room for than any other women to be, you know, surprisingly strong or robust or anything. And this happens a couple of times. I've seen this in a few other Marvel movies, which I'll talk about when we get to them. But I think that would have been such a good moment for, like, you know, the queen to kind of come out of nowhere and just a minute of good fighting. And then she could have been overwhelmed. I know that they need to kind of move on to you know, give the threat to Odin. But I still feel like that's a wasted opportunity when you had a chance for a woman that maybe you haven't considered in this, like, light or vein to just show her stuff a little bit more. And I was really sad to have missed that.
There appears to be no female frost giants as well. Do you think that a frost giant has a female in the species, or...
I couldn't possibly comment.
I mean, maybe there was, and they just all of them look so similar.
Well, they're like seahorses.
What are seahorses? I don't know what a seahorse is, but what's the uniqueness?
Well, men have the babies in seahorses.
Oh, wow.
Seahorse?
Plural. Horse eye.
And they're just kind of like, they're just kind of pushed down, and then like 100 mini seahorses just come out of
them. Yeah, but you still...
They just kind of bear down.
It is crazy looking. You should look up a YouTube video.
So I can imagine like the king of the frost giants sat in his throne just kind of...
Squirting out. baby frost giants.
What? Where did he go with that?
This is taking a strange turn.
That's how frost giants are born. Yeah. He sits on his ice nest.
Maybe he's got some of those things that ladies get their ankles strapped in.
Oh, God. Stirrups.
We'll cut this bit out.
Frost stirrups. Yeah, frost stirrups. Well, I don't know why everything has to be frost. But they go to the planet and it's literally a big ice cube. And they're made out of ice as well. And all the weapons are ice. It's just like we take one... What is it? Anna, is it a verb? Is it a noun or an adjective, the word frost?
Well, they use it for everything, I think.
So, yeah. Basically, they take one word and just run with it. Everything's frost.
Well, like putting the word Odin in front of everything.
Yeah. Everything's Odin now.
Yeah.
Here's my Odin spear. I'm Odin wake.
I'm
Odin woke. That's the enlightened phase of Odin. It's Odin woke.
Is that when he spent some time in New York in Ragnarok? He gets Odin woke.
But so he is woke now. So now he's woke. He's Odin woke.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were thinking about that final bit, like the Loki and Thor fight. One moment I flipping love is when he's sort of beating Loki down a bit, and just to kind of hold him in place, he just sticks the hammer on Loki's chest, just like pin him like a bug in a collection.
And we see that. We see that in other movies as well. That sets a precedent for Thor hammer the paperweight.
Yeah.
I like the end scene. I like the big thing falling off.
It smashes Rainbow Road.
Smashes Rainbow Road.
I think it's great.
You'll never see her again, except... He does. That never becomes a problem, really, does it?
Yeah, it's already been established in this movie that there's back channels.
Yeah, there's many ways.
That's how the frost giants got here. So there are other ways, but I think that's almost taken with too much weight in the movie. Mm. It's like, that's just one of Loki's like last grabs at trying to be like, stupid. And he's like, no, it's fine. I'm going to just fly over there and see it.
It was sad that he was like, he'd rather fall than have the shame of what he's done and not being able to, you know, look his dad in the eye again, maybe, and all that kind of stuff.
And apparently Thor goes into this proper mourning, like he's really sad. And again, again, at the beginning, I wish there had been a bit more of the camaraderie, understanding them as like brothers. Yeah, they have this rivalry. Loki's obviously been holding these like dark intents for a while. But I think in later movies, you get more of a sense of they were brothers. They had these like good times together. And so I think like Thor's like tragedy of having lost him felt a little bit strange, because this whole movie you've just seen Loki be the biggest dick in the world to him.
There is a deleted scene of them right at the start of the film, just before they go out for Thor's coronation, and it's those two like having loads of banter with each other.
Oh, what a shame!
And I think there's a line that Loki says it's something like it's not as explicit as rather you than me, but it's something about, you know, Loki accepting that it's Thor and he's happy with it. And I think if you add that in, you'd understand the sadness of the matter.
Yeah, that would have been a good one.
In your best Norse voice, in your Gimli voice, you know, the one, the warrior scene that looks like Gimli, could you please say my favourite line in the film, which is, do not mistake my appetite for apathy.
Oh,
I might need to practice on that one. What's Gimli's line to warm up?
No, no, that's that. He says it.
But what's Gimli's line in Lord of the Rings? And my axe!
Oh, yeah.
So, what's...
Do not mistake my appetite for apathy.
And he's kind of gonna, do not!
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do not mistake my appetite for apathy!
Yeah! Yeah.
Well done.
Brilliant.
That's going at the front of the podcast.
New theme tune. I really like, just one final note, is where Anthony Hopkins, or Odin, just has outbursts throughout the whole of the Marvel Universe. We're like, no!
Yeah. But you're not king.
But you're not king. And he always enunciates like the second to last word. Yeah. But you're not king. It's like, but you're not king. And it's just really, really well acted. The perfect Odin, I think, is Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah.
I wouldn't ever in my mind have casted anyone else. Overall, I think this is a really good movie. I think it's a really solid movie in the Marvel Universe. But my opinions can be saved to last. Anna, does Thor, has no prefix, it's just Thor, stay or go?
Totally stays.
Martin?
It stays like a coat stays on in New Mexico.
Eternally.
Eternally, forevermore.
And, you know, for me, it's a big blonde stay as well. It's a fantastic movie. If you've never seen it before, please go out and watch it. You don't need to necessarily watch this one in order, right?
No. I don't think so, no.
Watch this out of context. Yeah. I think that goes for everything in Phase 1 aside from Iron Man 2. Mm. And please, if you've listened to this podcast, if you've enjoyed it, if you've got any thoughts about the movie itself, hit us up in the reviews. Please remember to share the podcast. If the service you're listening to it on has a like button, sling it one of those as well. Tell all your friends about it. Thank you very much for listening today. Anna, where can listeners find you on social media?
They can finally find me on Instagram at Anna Marvelous, two N's, two L's.
And Martin, what about you?
Martin Loves on Twitter and Instagram.
And I am, as always, on Instagram and Twitter at DVN Preston. Thank you very much, and we will see you again next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. So the post-credits scene. Selvig, Fury, teaser, Loki. Do I need to say anything more? Martin, you up first. What are your feelings about the post-credits?
Why does Eric get to do the joining the S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff and not Natalie Portman? Because she's the brains here.
He costs less as an actor.
That's the answer there.
I think maybe, just to challenge your point slightly, do you think maybe actually we don't see Selvig's intelligence enough in this movie? He's kind of the mentor to Jane Foster. He's kind of the big guy of science historically. And actually, maybe it's completely appropriate for him to get taken out of the picture to theoretically let Jane Foster shine. Mm. She doesn't get to, but that's a failing, I think, of the Dark World. But it's almost like his resolve can be turned. Jane Foster's got a focus.
Yeah, I think considering that he becomes so manipulated by Loki, I think it would have been problematic to have Jane in that role. And I think in the movie it sort of established that I think maybe Selvig's already had some slight dealings with S.H.I.E.L.D. He mentions his gamma scientist friend who just disappeared. I think they sort of tap back into like a guy who knows the score.
I don't know. I felt like it felt like a man getting a job over a woman, but I'll keep those opinions to myself.
But I was very...
No, you literally just given us those opinions. You can't sit there smug and be all like, yes, but I will keep this private. You've just broadcast it to all.
I cannot help being Odin woke.
Well, on that note, thank you very much for joining us today. We'll see you again next week. Have a good time.
Bye.
Bye.